Rebirth of Slick by Jane St. Clair. Rated NC-17. Read by Azriel Jones. Clark's less sensitive to the heat than a lot of people. Pete, for whatever reason, pretty much collapses once the mercury hits 90, and Chloe's camping next to her air conditioner at home and won't move. On the other hand, Clark's apparently hit by it a lot harder than, say, his parents, who both insist on working like it's still a comfortable 70-something degrees, and insist he does too, who ignore him when he complains, tell him to grin and bear it, that it won't kill him. And it's not even that he doesn't like the sun. It's just the heat's so oppressive, and even if it doesn't make him feel as terrible as lots of people, he can still feel it, all over. It's a new adventure in whining, and sometime in the middle of the second day of soaking, static, oven hotness, his parents give in and accept that Clark's going to sleep in the basement whenever he doesn't have chores, and he'll be moving around at night when it's actually cool enough to do things. Summer, he read somewhere, is all about being nocturnal. He's sure he read that. No school tomorrow, his morning and evening chores still get done, and this way he has something like an excuse for being the only person in 100 miles without a sunburn. There are good things. There's a huge moon this week, bright enough that he thinks he'd be able to see even without the eagle eyes. Dark enough that if he wants to run, full out, just for the feel of it, he won't be spotted. If he wants to jump for a tree branch, 20 or 30 feet up and overshoots, there's just him to notice. It's still hot, but it's dark, and the freedom's almost enough. Though eventually it's not lonely, quite, because there are other people around, and he's fairly sure Pete's doing the day sleep thing too, but getting on for boring. Nothing's open, most people are asleep or trying to be. He knows Lana's not, but she's trying hard. She wakes up, walks around the house, stretches at her window without ever looking at the ground, and goes back to bed. Sometimes she gets up and peels her shirt off, leans into the window's draft, and she has the kind of real, soft, tiny girl breasts that'll give him masturbation material for the next 10 years of his life, and probably for a while after that, when it starts being disturbing instead of just needy. It's miles too far into stalker behavior to hang out under her window all night, though, so eventually he walks. Roads for a bit, fields after that, over land through crops towards a somewhere that turns out to be Lex's, over the gates, over the lawns. Clark stops for a minute on the frozen garden pond and actually kneels and presses his face to the ice, this wonderful cold that lets him forget the person who's trapped at its center. He takes his shoes off after, and walks through the grass barefoot. It's cooling off a bit, enough that it's easing out of agonizing and into comfortable. The Luther Manor's windows are all open, which kicks Clark into the realization that the house isn't air-conditioned. He wonders about that. He knows the place is chilly in the winter, but not icy, so there's definitely some sort of semi-modern heating system involved, and the building's been wired for electricity, so it can't be a need for historical integrity keeping Lex in a big stone oven. There are French doors open, farther along, billowy white curtains blowing in whenever the air moves. All right, then, it's all about the romance. Heir to old money empire in the steamy, dark family estate in the heat of the summer. He wonders if the gardeners have started planting magnolias yet. If he had Chloe's camera, he'd have blackmail material forever. Coming in through the open doors is going on the list of entirely too pretentious things Clark's done in his life. Some sort of Tom Cruise imitation going on, echoes of various Night of the Vampire movies and all of Chloe's secret stash of Anne Rice novels. He was expecting some kind of studio, or a back entrance that'd let the air move through the house, but it's neither. First floor, without the carnival velvet that coats everything upstairs. Not enough furniture, either. Most of what's there has sheets over it, only the bed's uncovered. Lex is on the bed, face down, sprawled, sweat in the hollows of his back, wearing a skirt. Bare legs, bare top, skirt around his hips, some kind of loose cotton thing, comfortable looking, but also eerily drag show-ish. Clark didn't think he was making noise, but Lex twists, suddenly, and sits up on one hip, snaps, "Who's there?" Clark puts his hands up. "Just me, sorry." Lex's pupils are huge in the dark, and it takes Clark a second to realize that the question wasn't addressed to him, not really. He can still remember occasional sleepovers when he was a kid enough to know that people are capable of saying all sorts of weird things with their eyes wide open and entirely still asleep. If Lex was jumpy before, though, he's just about convulsive now. "What?" Quick scramble while he turns around to look properly. "Clark! Jesus!" One more big-eyed second before Lex collapses back onto the mostly stripped bed. "What are you doing here?"
"I was walking, and you, left the doors open. I didn't realize you were sleeping in here," he grins. "Gotta wonder about your vampire fantasies, though. I think you're a couple of 100 miles north for where you want to be for that."
Lex snorts, still staring at the ceiling. "This place has no air conditioning. I haven't been this hot since I came back from Sumatra. Good coffee, bad climate. What can I do for you?" Clark finds a chair. There's a row of them, back against the opposite wall, all covered in sheets. Hauls it over close to the bed and sits down. "I was bored." Clark. Little lift in the middle of his name that makes it somewhere between a tease and a question. "I was bored. It's dark and it's hot and... Lex, you're wearing a skirt. Why?" Lex sits up, stands up, stretches, then snaps down to grab the skirt before it falls off completely. Not exactly a skirt, more like a very thin towel with no terry cloth and some interesting patterns going on. "It's a sarong. It's perfectly normal in a lot of places. None of which are Smallville. Since this one came back with me from Sumatra, no, not in Smallville. But I wasn't planning on the local populace dropping in to watch me sleep. Sorry. Though he's really not. Lex is awake, which means that boredom can wander off for a while. He wonders what Lex might think is worth doing all night. "I'm not. God, I wish I wasn't here." Lex stretches again, arms over his head. "No, actually I just wish I wasn't this hot. Maybe if I was naked."
"Yeah, but you still have company."
"If you went away, I wouldn't have that problem." "Which is a point, actually."
"You want me to go away?"
"No, I'm not sleeping, apparently, and I'm not going to. I'd take off for a week, but the plant's keeping me too busy." He sighs. "If I can't sleep, I'm going to swim. Coming?" Lex walks off into the house. Even in the dark, he's disturbingly close to being naked. The cloth around his hips is just barely there, though it's maybe not so much the bare skin as the sweat and the sleep smell and the way Clark really did wake Lex up. Deeper in the house, it's past hot and into miserable. It'll take days to cool the place off after the heat breaks. Clark can breeze through it, more or less, but Lex hunches just that extra bit that says he'd be happier if he were just about anywhere else. More doors open, more halls. Carpets and then stone floors. Humid, dark room that they come to, finally, cooler. Water reflections on the ceiling. There's some kind of climate control system in here, at least. While Clark's wondering why there isn't one anywhere else, Lex drops the sarong and dives. Night swimming. It sounds really, really good. None of the mosquitoes outside, who tickle him all over, even if they can't manage to bite. Better with company than doing it alone. He thinks he's been invited, and if not, he seems to be making his own invitations tonight. Strips off his t-shirt and shorts, and drops straight in off the side. Water. It's bluish. It's cooler. Clark sees colors in the dark the way nobody else does, and he can almost understand the why of it. Something about rods and cones that they got to learn about in science class. Stuff he learned for the test and then forgot. Clark turns somersaults in the water, brushes his hands along the bottom. He comes up for air eventually, just for a second, and dives again. There are ripples somewhere up above him, Lex swimming. Clark rolls onto his back, gets the weird, weird view of a human body in mid-stroke,
and just for a second eye contact with Lex through the water, before it occurs to him that anybody else would have come up by now. So, up. He makes a show of gasping when he surfaces, and treads water for a minute until he thinks he should be steady. Then for a while, just so he can watch the water ripples reflecting on the ceiling. Lex keeps sliding through the water around him, never quite in reach, until he slides in dolphin fast and drags a hand across Clark's ribs before disappearing.
Gah! Lex! He thrashes, twists around, and can't see anything.
Which one of them is supposed to be the eerie one? Looks again and spots Lex, out of the pool and lying on his stomach, watching Clark and grinning. Clark dives to the bottom and kicks his way to the side, rises straight up under Lex's nose.
If you're going to grope me when I'm not looking...
Lex kisses him, warm and wet and still sleep-tasting, locked onto Clark and hanging over the pool's edge to do it. Clark eventually notices that he's gripping the pool's edge to keep from sinking, most of him shouting about mouth contact and sex and warm water and the fairly long list of things his body wants to happen next. Nothing useful, though eventually Clark breaks the kiss and arches back, working tension out of his neck. It gives Clark time to scramble out of the water. It leaves him perched on the edge, probably wilder-eyed than he'd like, but not in danger of drowning Lex, either.
Remind me which one of us is supposed to be the predator?
Lex grins at him. I don't remember you claiming you were.
You're the one playing vampire victim.
I was asleep. In a perfectly normal way, in a house that's too hot. In my own house. Then you woke me up. Told me to play with you.
I didn't say that.
You said you were bored.
I'm not anymore.
Good. Lex slides over beside him and sits up, cross-legged. Breathes on Clark's skin for a few seconds before kissing the side of his neck.
Lex,
you can feel free to leave. The rest of the world, in the dark, all alone, is very, very boring.
I'm cold.
Lex stares at him. It's not cold in here.
Compared with the rest of the house.
Fine. Lex stands. He isn't hard, but he's interested. Cock to eye with Clark, currently. He offers down a hand. Come on. He kisses Clark again in the hall, against the wood paneling. Again with Clark's head pressed to one of the paintings in a way that'll probably ruin it. Water still dripping out of his hair. Lex's tongue in his mouth is this wonderful, sexy, fascinating thing that makes him grateful that he's currently in the middle of his day instead of out past curfew. And the bedroom that isn't Lex's, he doesn't think, is still there, still hot, still full of sheets and melodramatic curtains and open doors. There were blankets, he notices, but they've all been very deliberately thrown on the floor. Just sheets and pillows, and even the pillows are off to one side. He thinks about the airflow, about the sweat already building again on his body and Lex's.
Think we can move the bed?
Lex looks at him. I wasn't really planning on rearranging furniture, Clark.
Yeah, but I think we could catch more of the draft if we move this a couple of feet. That's all, I swear. Look.
He hooks his fingers over the foot of the bed and tugs experimentally. He thinks he can move it without being obvious, and he might as well. The bed scrapes across the floor, but when he's done, the moving air is hitting it. Clark turns his face into the draft and closes his eyes. Behind him, Lex wraps an arm around his waist and leans in, mouths at one shoulder blade, gropes him.
Jesus!
Lex's mouth twists against his skin. Thank you. There's enough of a push against his back that Clark gets he's supposed to bend over. Possibly a disturbing thought, since he's not quite sure he's ready to be bent over pieces of furniture, but when he shifts his weight, he finds himself in more of a sprawl, with Lex somewhere between, on top of, and beside him. More wrestling to get them both flat, and then, yes, more kissing. Slow, careful, not quite as demanding as before. Lex is probably really tired, just too restless to actually settle down and sleep. He's hard now. Slick, very soft skin keeps rubbing against Clark's hip, smelling like chlorine in a way that's going to change showering after gym forever and ever.
I swear,
kiss. To God, kiss. This isn't why I, kiss, came over.
I know, I started it. Do you want me to stop?
I want you to tie me down.
Lex pushes up on his forearms and stares down at Clark. I wouldn't have thought that was your thing.
I wasn't serious. I just mean, you know, don't stop.
Right. Kissing. He can feel Lex shiver every time a draft hits him, but he's soaking wet. Spicy smelling in the heat, salty around the edges of his mouth, he tastes really good. The knee between Clark's legs gives him something to rub against. Not quite enough, but...
Lex!
Fingers, better, wrapped around his cock. This human hand, belonging to another person. The slick, very friendly body pressed against him, kissing him all over. Very good sex things going on, all goth imagery aside. And Lex in a spiked collar, where did that vision come from? Is one of those wonderful images that he suspects he'll find out more about later. He could touch back. He's discovered that Lex likes having his ass rubbed, even just in an open hands-on skin way. He makes tiny noises when Clark does it, jerks against him. Feels really good. Love what you're doing. Can you just... No, I want you to fuck me. That stops him. Lex is straddling him, naked, slick, grinning, suggesting that Clark... Wow. He's now officially at least 10 steps up from the farm boy geekdom of his public identity, since he's considering carnal knowledge of billionaire sons, and not the cows who got involved in that very weird rumor last year.
Bad image. Clark shakes his head. Lex kisses him. Please.
What? Oh, no. I mean, yes. Yes, that's a good idea. Lex taps Clark's forehead. There's something going on in here that I'm going to want to know about later. I'll give you anything not to ask. There isn't anything you can give me. Kiss me. Lex hands him an embarrassing drugstore sex product. Plastic tube, like hair gel, but not so neon. Cold on his fingers, though it doesn't last long enough to get that chill as far as Lex's body. Naked body. Lying down beside him, grinning at him. Pulling up a knee and offering, and... This is where sex ed would have been useful. Lex separates two fingers from the rest of Clark's half-bald fist. You take these, you put them in me with the lube on them. You enjoy the part where I yowl like a cat. You add more of this stuff. You do it again until it stops seeming like a good idea. Then you put most of the rest of it on you and figure out the rest. I'll help. This is what rich people get to do. Lie on their backs against unreasonable numbers of pillows, ruining good sheets and rearranging the universes of Kansas-raised aliens, previously baseline heterosexual, with inexplicable reputations for bestiality. Lex tastes wonderful, salty and warm, and he stretches in whatever direction Clark asks for. Mouth against interesting skin, while he works on sliding his fingers into a very tight, very hot part of Lex's body. And for a while, Lex just talks to him, tells him he's doing fine, strokes his head, bends to kiss him occasionally. He stiffens eventually, mid-kiss, though, and breathes, "Fuck yes, right there." And after that, things are a lot less controlled. While Clark's rearranging them and slicking himself, he manages to find out the stuff's mostly tasteless and just the tiniest bit sweet, like gelatin. That Lex's hips feel good against his stomach, and that they're apparently going to do this face-to-face, though he wouldn't have thought that would quite work. It does, though, once Lex gets his knees hooked around Clark's hips and gives him a certain amount of help lining up. Clark pushes, cups Lex's skull in both hands and kisses him. Fuck, against his mouth. He can feel Lex stretching around him, tight in spite of the slick mess he made, hard and shaky for a minute. And then Lex just relaxes, grins at him and pulls him down, whispers, "Fuck me," into Clark's ear, and shifts his hips in a way that make it a very good idea. Clark gives a couple of experimental thrusts, then figures it out in a way that makes the entire universe blindingly obvious. Grinds himself in,
bends to kiss Lex one more time and starts pushing inside so carefully, sweaty and aching, loving this, loving the hisses Lex makes whenever Clark pushes with just a fraction of the force he actually wants to use. He could do this. Just let go and take Lex. Bend him up double and fuck him till he screams. Do it as hard as his body wants. But his friend, friendly, strange, interesting, beautiful guy, who wakes up and play with him in sticky, messy, probably illegal ways, when Clark asks. And it's not that it's actually quite true, but he needs to say it. Hikes Lex's leg up around his hip, bends in close, and says, "Love you." Lex stills and clamps his hands around Clark's face, pushes him back and looks at him for a minute, then grins, like he more or less understood that, and says, "Thanks." He twists then, like he's trying to sit up. "Give me a hand?" "That depends. What are you trying to do, Lex?" "I want to ride you." "It's a good idea. A wonderful, mind-blowing idea, all about sex and playing and the sheer heat tonight, and the fairly long list of ways in which Lex is gorgeous." Clark isn't sure how they're going to manage it, but they do eventually roll over, and once Lex is up, he's on it, bucking and twisting and arching back, riding Clark like a parody of a cowboy, grinning hugely down at him. And it's easier. He doesn't have to worry about the need to keep pushing harder and harder, as long as he's not the one in control. It feels so good. Tight body still clamped around his, knees around his hips. Lex slides a hand down behind himself and catches Clark's balls in his hand and rolls them. "Oh, wow. You don't know the half of it. Oh, God, Clark, can you twist like that again?" "He can. He can do anything Lex wants him to. He will concentrate very, very hard and do all the things that Lex likes before he can even ask for them. Best lover in the world, he's sure, even if he does come first. He gets to feel Lex ride him through it, and then ride him after, frantic at the end, almost too much for Clark to take while his cock is this sensitive. Lex groans and twists, shoots, and collapses onto Clark's chest, wraps his arm around Clark's neck, and nuzzles bonelessly. It goes on for a while. Even after Lex stills, it takes Clark a minute or two to realize Lex is asleep. Gone. It's fair, he supposes, but not quite what he wanted. Good, though. He slides out, shifts Lex off to one side, keeps an arm around him while he sleeps. Touches him sometimes, watching the way Lex's body reacts without a conscious Lex in control. Little arches and whimpers when Clark finds sensitive spots. This tiny hiss of pain when Clark fingers Lex's hole. Eventually, Clark dozes too. It's cooler, but he can feel the temperature rising again, and he'll have to be moving at dawn if he wants to get his chores done before it's miserably hot. He has to crawl out from under Lex before morning. His clothes are on the floor by the pool, and he gets lost for a while looking for them. Ends up swimming again to get the worst of the mess off. His shoes are at Lex's door. Runners on his bare feet, home like the wind. He's still thinking about it when his chores are done. Doesn't think his parents are even awake yet. The house is the kind of quiet it is before they wake up. He finds food in the fridge, eats standing up, showers and changes into other clothes, and throws yesterday's on the pile. None of them smell like anything in particular, and after a swim and a shower, he doesn't smell like Lex. He should go to bed. He's been awake 14 hours, and he's aching in ways that don't quite hurt, but almost do. In his head, at least. When he goes to pull the blind shut, he sees the car. Lex is parked just inside the yard, leaning against the door and staring at the house unfocusedly. Clark isn't sure that Lex can see him. He goes downstairs anyway. Walks out into the yard barefoot and stands there, his hands in his pockets. Lex raises an eyebrow. "You left early?" "I had chores." "Did you sleep?" "I was going to sleep now." "Come over." "What?" "Come over." "You missed the part about sleeping all day?" "I didn't miss it. Come over. It's daytime." I think you'll find people think it's fairly normal for you to visit in daylight hours.
Sleep, Lex.
Come over.
Okay.
He doesn't have any shoes.
No note, but the mess he left in the kitchen's enough to prove he was home.
He gets in the car.
Dozes on the drive back.
He's almost asleep by the time Lex stops, and he doesn't want to get up.
It's not reasonable for him to lean on Lex while he's walking, but he does it anyway, the way he made his father carry him occasionally until he was 12.
Tired.
I'll be reading when you wake up.
He surfaces occasionally. At some point his shirt disappears, but it's hot enough he can't worry about it.
He stirs without really coming back to consciousness, and Lex slips grapes into his mouth, because he's still there, sitting up on clean sheets, reading papers, all afternoon, just occasionally touching him, waiting for Clark to wake up.